Yeah, sure thing.
Hey, you sold that car yet?
Yeah, sold it to Carvana.
Oh, I thought you were selling to that guy.
The guy who wanted to pay me in foreign currency, no interest over 36 months? Yeah, no. Carvana gave me an offer in minutes, picked it up, and paid me on the spot. It was so convenient.
Just like that?
Yeah.
No hassle?
None.
That is super convenient.
Sell your car to Carvana and swap hassle for convenience. Pickup fees may apply.
Hey, football fans, it's Patrick Peterson, former three-time All-Pro NFL cornerback, and now the new host of First and Pod, the podcast that breaks down every game, every week, with new episodes dropping every Monday and Friday mornings. Plus, I'll be highlighting key matchups for DBs around the league on Patrick's Corner. Be sure to subscribe to First and Pod on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, here we go on a Wednesday. It's Cody and Gold, Alex Gold, Cody Tapp, Drew Nixon with you for the next 4 hours. Coming up in about a half hour, Ross Tucker, our Odyssey NFL insider, is going to join us. We'll get into Chiefs-Texans, what he sees in this matchup, certainly one that we just saw back in Week 16. We'll also get into the Ravens and the Bills, and we'll find out what game he's going to be around. I know he was at the Steelers-Ravens game this past weekend. He was on, I think, the sideline for the Eagles game. So he got a front row seat for a couple of these teams. I want to get his perspective on all of that. That's coming up in 30 minutes, and you guys can always hit us up on the Jays Southland Tow Service text line, 913-586-7965. We're also streaming on video as well. You guys can check out the show, Facebook, Twitch, Twitter, YouTube. You'll be able to watch us as well.
Like and subscribe over on those channels if you'd like to see our unshaven faces. Doesn't look like either of us are shaven.
No, we got a little scruff today.
You got like a 2-3 day thing going?
Yeah, I think that's right. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, what's today? Today's Wednesday?
Yeah, this when is one will of you those. Shave next? What's the next
Friday, because I got to do a video, like a my betting show on Saturdays is on like video.
You're on video now.
Yeah, it's not the same.
Explain.
That is a show that is all video based.
But this show is on video.
Yeah, this is every day. That's national. That one's also national.
Not the video. The video's not. Do you see what I'm saying? Like, our video is also national. You can watch it from anywhere.
You could. But it actually, the show itself, when we're telling people to go on Twitch, it's listened to on our Infinity Sports Network.
Versus, like, you're saying if this video was on the Odyssey account, that account doesn't have any followers. Our account, well, I don't know about the Infinity one. I meant the Odyssey one. Yeah. I don't know. Yeah,
they don't put on the eye. BetQL is what it is. Anyway, long story short, and yes, to answer Cody's question,
you're not caring as much about your parents for this show, you know?
It's 5 days a week, you know? I got to shave every night, you know? I'm going to have a little scruff. We've joked about you. Yours is just chin related, usually. Yours is more the chin.
Yeah. Doesn't come into the cheeks very fast. Eventually, you know, you gave me 6 to 9 months, this beard will be looking, you know, top. Beard look pretty
sure?
Good. I think if I, yeah, whole year.
I thought
year,
you tried before and it came in all patchy.
It was 1 month. It was just when we did the no shave November thing when it was like me, you, and Nick.
That's right.
And after a month, it started to somewhat resemble a beard. I said 6 to 9 months, as you just heard. I need way more time. And it would like, you'd have to be trimming the neck hair just to make it all like even for a while.
Oh, it's a pain in the butt. I've told you, it's annoying. That's also another reason why I let it go a couple days before I shave. Anyway, 913-586-7965, Jay Southland Tow Service text line. I hope you enjoyed that quick conversation. Someone says, I know every show has his intro music, but they think it's time for us to change. I think it's one of those where it's what you expect to hear when the show starts. Hmm. Plenty of shows have the same music.
What do you want instead?
Yeah.
Like new walk-up music?
Mm-hmm.
That's actually a bet we should make with Vinny. We should make a bet on a playoff game this year. And if he wins, then he can choose our intro music for like a week.
Mm-hmm.
And if we win, we get to choose what he walks to the plate to for a week.
That we'll see if he wants to do that. I think what happened with our intro music is we changed and people loved it. And then there was a couple commercials that came out, like national TV commercials that started using the song again, because it's obviously an older song, but it came back. And then people maybe got sick of it in that regard. I don't know. It's what people expect when they hear the show. Just like you pick any national show or local show, like just you get used to hearing the, and that's what you expect.
I'm open. Like it wasn't the only one we've done for the 5 years, but you know, you're going to have to come correct with the suggestion.
All right. So we'll figure that out. Let's get into the Chiefs and Texans a little bit. Our divisional round coverage brought to you by Bud Light, the official beer partner of your Kansas City Chiefs. We know throughout this season, it's been one score game after one score game, really going back to last season as well. We know when they played the Texans in week 16, it was a one score game, barely, but it was a one score game, 27-19. And based off of all these close games, are we just expecting every playoff game to be a close game as well? I don't have to give you the numbers on the NFL other than wild card weekend, one score games, basically 70 plus 80% of the games or whatever.
No team has had this low of a scoring margin. Yeah. And look, it's not the NFL itself is it, but the Chiefs were at a heightened degree of that, especially for a team that won as many games they did. It was always the same thing. No team has ever won 15 games and had this small of a point differential. No team has had this many one score games in which they've won in a row. And by the way, yeah, even that loss to Denver didn't impact that because they got their ass kicked by Denver, so it didn't matter. So, like, all this other stuff goes in here, and you're just kind of running in the middle. I do kind of anticipate that run to continue. For all the things I know that the Chiefs can just turn on come postseason time, I don't think it's a fluke that they won games, but I also don't think it's a fluke that they played so many close games. I think their margin of error is less this year than it has been in previous years. They've just done a way better job navigating it to a win total. So do I think because they played a lot of close games in the regular season, they are likely to play a lot of close games in the postseason? Yeah, I do. I expect this game to be close. I expect it to be a one-score game. I expect the game after that to be a one-score game and the game after that to be a one-score game, because that's typically what Kansas City has played in this year.
I would just say that's typically what the NFL is. Yeah. I know we had our conversation early in the week about how non-competitive the wild card weekend was other than the Commanders game or whatever, but 80% of NFL games are one-score games, so yeah, I mean, the safe bet is to look at the Texans game and hopefully an AFC title game and a Super Bowl, and you take a look at how competitive those typically have been. I would say, knowing the opponent and the fact that it's not AFC title game weekend yet, if you were to tell me that this game is going to be more comfortable or a little bit past one score, it's a 10-point win or something like that, that would not surprise me. The Texans lost by 8 points the last go-around. The Chiefs might have Jalen Watson this go-around. They didn't have him the last time. I mean, the Texans also got a few guys
and
back.
Hollywood Brown. Was he back? But his first game.
It was his first game. So we'll see. We're going to talk about Travis Kelce and being healthy and everything like that for this postseason run. All of that, it would not surprise me. We'll give our official game predictions on Friday. Like, I looked at the line. You know, it's up to 8.5. You know, you might want to tease it down a little bit if that concerns you, but I think that's about right. Like, if you were to tell me the Chiefs win once again by eight to 10 points or something, like, yeah, that seems kind of like it would make a lot of sense for the Chiefs in the Texans game on Saturday afternoon.
I think some of this is just, we should accept this about, this is the way that Andy goes about winning games. And because of how many games he's won, it's a difficult thing to nitpick based on the way he does it. Andy shuts it down. He always has, and he still will. So, like, if they get up, let's just say 14-0, and you're like, here it comes. Here comes the blowout. No, it'll be 17-10 in the third quarter because Andy took in and pulled everything in. It was a 4th-and-1 from the 40, and because he was up 7, he punted. You know, he took the 5-yard from the other team's 40. He'll take the five-yard penalty and let him kick it, let Ariza kick it into the back of the end zone. They'll net 20 yards, and then the Texans will go down. You'll be like, why is this game close? Why is it 24-16 now all of a sudden in the fourth quarter? And that's because Andy knows that the clock is his friend. And there was a time when Andy did not know that. I would say that Colts playoff game way, 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 way back when. He didn't use the clock to his advantage. But, like, he'll try to play this thing close, and sometimes that means the Texans come back. And I also don't think that they're a flawless defensive team. I don't think this defense is as good as last year's defense. I don't think they're as shut down as last year's defense. I think they can be had in areas they were not exposed to last year. So I also think some teams can score against them a little easier than in previous years. And I know that the points per game is still very good. Would they ever finish 2nd, 3rd in the NFL at the end of the year? But, like, if I made them go side by side, I think it's less likely this year that the Chiefs just, like, hold a team to 10 while they put up 28.
I think that's probably fair, but I just I still don't think this is a bad matchup at all on Sunday. As I told you with the remaining playoff field, I know some people maybe will differ and claim it's the Commanders, and there's an argument there. Otherwise, I think the Chiefs are playing the worst team that's left in the entire playoff field, not just on the AFC side, but also on the NFC side. They're the number one seed, so it kind of makes sense that that's how it should be. I know we all would have preferred the Steelers because that offense is just flat out abysmal. CJ Stroud at least is capable of making some special plays. I don't really think Russell Wilson is. They also don't have a wide receiver like George Pickens, who just takes plays off and is unhappy and showing up late reportedly to football games and stuff like that. They don't have that. They have Nico Collins, who is a stud at the wide receiver spot. But this is still a Texans team that I don't think you should be all that fearful of, frankly. And yesterday we had our conversation about where would it rank upset wise and everything. That's a big reason why I think it would be one of the biggest upsets, as you did as well, in the last, 5 to 10 years in the NFL, if that's the case. So I think for Andy Reid, though, we have seen on fourth downs, you said, he maybe if they're up by a significant margin in the fourth quarter.
Up, yeah.
But in general, he's more likely to go for fourth downs in the playoffs.
He is. I mean, historically,
we looked it up last year, I think, during the playoff run. The numbers bear it out. Like, he is more willing on those fourth and ones, fourth and twos. Doesn't mean he's doing QB sneaks, but he'll do whatever he needs to do. He'll be more aggressive on the opening drive against the Texans. If the Chiefs, are in that position where it's a fourth and one, they're moving the ball, but it stalls out at the 38-yard line, especially even the 35-yard line with the unknown about Butker's leg. I think he's absolutely going for it here in the postseason. Maybe he wouldn't in the regular season.
See, I know we did the brief conversation to be like, who does the rest help the most? And people were bringing up Kareem Hunt because that's what Mitch Holtis had said on the drive. And you and I were talking about Travis Kelce, who obviously benefited from the rest last year. I do not understand anybody who thinks Harrison Butker benefits from the rest. Otherwise, they would have rested him rather than rushed him back.
Yeah, he just needs to kick.
Yeah. If just sitting on his ass was going to make Harrison Butker be a more reliable kicker towards the end of the season, they let him do that on the front end, not on the back end. The rest didn't actually help him. You're right. He needs to be in a live game action kicking situation. And until he starts just nailing everything in the postseason from a kicking standpoint, I'm going to be a little nervous about that. But that's a fair point from the text line. And I see it over on Twitch and YouTube that he has historically been far more aggressive in the postseason, but not with a lead typically. Andy with a lead, he loves to take the ball home. He loves to just get in there, get a lead, ride out the clock, and win this thing. Even that Baltimore game, and I don't know if they'll face Baltimore again, week one of the regular season. I thought he did some of that there, where they had control of that Baltimore game, and Baltimore kept creeping back in, to the point that it was hey, if we just get one stop, Baltimore can't win. And Baltimore eventually had a toe out of bounds on the Isaiah Likely touchdown, and they did win the game. That's not lucky. If Baltimore had given themselves more time, or if Andy had given them more time, they'd have maybe had another shot at winning the game. But because the Ravens never possessed the ball with a chance to really take the lead until the final drive of the game, Andy will take those risks in a lot of ways, which is fine. I just expect close games in the regular season, usually. I don't think they're getting further apart in the postseason.
No, one other thing. Does this count as an Andy Reid post bye week, too? Because that's what's happening, right?
They the percentage of teams who were favored by a touchdown to win in the divisional round, right? I mean, it's 80-85%.
Andy Reid post bye week is now, I think if you include this year, 22-4. I think it was 21-4, the article. Yeah. It's a 22-4 post bye week. We know Mahomes has never lost a divisional round. I mean, there's a lot of reasons why this is a very comfortable spot for the Chiefs. I don't have to tell you, they're at home. It also looks like it's going to be wind chill wise very, very cold on Saturday afternoon. A Texans team that plays indoors, I mean, we all know that, and there's a chance of some snow. I don't think the snow is going to be a factor, but temperature wise it looks like it's going to be not Miami cold from last year in the wild card round, but it's going to be really cold, and I want to see how CJ Stroud handles that. I understand where he played in college, and it's not like it was 90 degrees every time there, but in the NFL he's playing in a lot of domes, playing in a lot of indoor environments. Think about that division. He's got home games in Houston. He's playing indoors in Colts in Indianapolis. He's playing down south in Jacksonville. Nashville can get chilly or cold later in the year.
Chilly,
they just had snow this past weekend, in fairness. But you get the point. Overall, I don't know who his non-divisional opponents were this year, but I would guess 70% of his games were indoors or in warm weather climates.
I did actually look it up because last week someone was being a know-it-all. It was technically Kansas City and Nashville are on the same part of the equator. I was okay, relax a little. And I looked it up, and I wasn't wrong. Nashville is historically a warmer climate than Kansas City. Not way warmer, I'm not here trying to claim that it's the tropics and Kansas City's the Arctic tundra, but there is a difference in their temperature typically. But yes, I'm with you. But a lot of this is like close games happen in the playoffs, but this is about as comfortable as a playoff game gets. You're at home. You're an 8.5-point favorite. They're a warm weather city who plays in a dome. You already beat them. Andy off a bye. Patrick in the divisional round. Almost every single statistical edge is in your favor. So, like, it is kind of hard to shake. Meanwhile, last night, for maybe the second time all year, I was locked into a little college basketball because I was curious whether or not to take MU seriously this season. Kansas State game, a game I thought they had control of, seemed like they had control of, and then let Texas Tech back into and eventually winning the game. So we can get to Jerome Tang in a minute and what happened to K-State. MU's a tournament team. They just beat a very, very, very tough Florida team on the road. And honestly, what stands out to me is, okay, Dennis Gates, 3 years, you made the tournament the first year, then you were so bad last year. I'm like, oh boy, whew, they might be regretting the old, they might have gotten a little too quick on the Dennis Gates going to fix the program part. And now all of a sudden, what, they're a 15-win team already? Like, I mean, I guess we got to take MU serious, Cole. They're a tournament team. They might have something with Dennis Gates. His recruiting system worked this year versus last year.
Yeah, I think that's what I take away from this. 100% they're going to be a tournament team, no doubt. When you have wins against the Kansas team and a Florida team already, you're in an SEC, and the opportunities you're going to have throughout the rest of the conference season, let alone an SEC tournament, yeah, they're going to have plenty of opportunities to rack up even more quality wins the rest of the way. The question for them will just be, when we fast forward to March, where are they at on the seed line and stuff like that? But Dennis Gates is going to have this Missouri Tigers team back in the tournament. But how he built it. Look at, as you said, winless in conference play a year ago in the SEC. They did not just go attack the portal. No, they have, it's a very young Missouri team. Like, it's a really young Missouri team. Great recruiting class they brought in. They also actually know how to rebound the basketball this year, which was a major problem for
that
them.
Stood out last night.
A year ago, and it was huge last night against Florida. And then you look on the other hand, as you brought up Jerome Tang, like, they went heavy in the transfer portal like they did in year one. It led to an Elite Eight in year one. This year, it's been disastrous for Kansas State. KU has struggled with the transfer portal a little bit this year, even though they're still top 10 in the country, but yeah, by their standard. And so that's what's interesting to me in how Dennis Gates has built this team. Last night, that was as impressive as a win as you have. I understand, like, Kansas because of the rivalry and all that, but that was at home. This was on the road at Florida against the Gators team that this year was, what, one loss, right, heading into that game?
And just kicked the teeth in of Tennessee, another good basketball team.
So I thought that was really impressive for Missouri, and there's no doubt they're going to be in the tournament. They'll be, unless they lay an egg against Arkansas on Saturday, they're absolutely going to be ranked on Monday when the new rankings come out. They play, I think it's in Columbia, though, but they play Arkansas Saturday.
We were talking during our pre-show meeting, Cody, and you mentioned that you think it might just be kind of the state of college basketball, how things flow year.
I think there might be a bigger ebb and flow now, because, like, there's just some years that you're going to go all into the portal and miss. You're going to be Kansas, right? And you're going to be like AJ Storer, and you're going to be like, this ain't working.
Yeah, but there's a difference between missing and still being top 20 in the country, and missing not, going 0-18 in conference play.
Sure, but that's also just the difference of quality of programs, too, right? Kansas, even if they totally whiff in the transfer portal, will still be a 3 seed, right? They're not They're not going to be garbage. Well, now, that look, Missouri was bad last year, like you said. Not a single SEC win.
I think, too, though, if you rely on the portal too much in college basketball, we're seeing, I don't know what Mizzou's roster looked like last year, but we're seeing it with Kansas State this year. They've been portal reliant. Some years you hit, some years you don't. If you don't hit, you're having a year like Kansas State's having. If you hit, you're going to the Elite Eight potentially. So you have to find that balance. And I think in college basketball, we're seeing some teams, like in Missouri and K-State's point, a really bad year to a really good season because of Dennis Gates going out and getting the recruiting class that he did. To Gold's point, it's all true freshmen. He's pulling out of the John Calipari playbook, essentially, in this regard, and getting elite true freshmen, and he's finding a way to coach him up in the toughest conference in college basketball, where Jerome Tang went to the portal like he has traditionally and worked out for him. As a result, they're not as good because the Big 12 is too good of a conference where you can miss in the portal in particular and still find a way to compete with the best in the conference.
I agree about the ebbs and flows. I would say that even in the old era of college basketball, it was much harder to have, you know, three or four straight years of sustained success at an MU or a K-State compared to a blue blood or something like that. I totally agree.
Sure,
I
but would not say, like, just like totally miserably.
That's what I mean. Is like, yeah, nobody's saying that. Like, it's obviously much tougher at a place like Kansas State to consistently go to Elite Eights or something, right? That's a big ask.
Yeah, they should make the tournament about 50-60% of the time.
If you're Missouri, you know, the ebb and flow, 0-18 conference play, like, that just can't happen. You know what I mean?
You have to avoid that.
And so that's what is, you know, on one hand, really impressive for them to turn around this quickly.
Puts in a weird spot. It's like, how do you, like, if you're a Missouri fan, I am kind of curious. How do you feel about Dennis Gates? You feeling really good this year? Made the tournament in year one, but I'm sure of it. Missouri fans were ready to drag him out by the collar at the end of last season, right? I'm confident they were ready to drag him out by, you know, like, kicking and screaming out of there. And now, like, to your point, I think the flip side is what's happening at K-State. People loved Jerome Tang. They were ready to, you know, lay on hot coals for Jerome Tang. They were ready for the guy.
They wanted him to stay.
And right now, if you ask K-State fans, I do not think that that's the energy towards Jerome Tang, where things have gone south here in a bit, and I think that they're starting to feel that, like, pressure a lot. So, like, you got to be real careful sometimes on coaching in the very, in my opinion, the first contract they get, where, like, don't get too married to the guy too fast. And just because they flirt with Arkansas and they're like, well, I could leave. Okay.
Yeah.
Jerome Tang. You know, like, sometimes you got to call their bluff.
Don't get too high, but also I think don't get too low, because we see what happened with Dennis Gates, where they had a miserably bad season last year and they flipped it around completely within the span of 8 months.
Yeah, Jerome Tang, his agent deserves all the credit in the world for pulling that one off this past offseason. I understand the Walton family ponied up the money for Cal at Arkansas, but I don't think Jerome Tang was ever getting hired at Arkansas. And his agent was able to make K-State fans and the university very nervous about losing him, and he got a massive bump in pay. And as you said, there's now, what, a $18, $20 million buyout or whatever,
big number,
for Tang in 1 year. I mean, it's weird. I mean, go back to Bruce Weber days at Kansas State as well. Remember, they didn't like the hire at the beginning, and then he won the Big 12, I think, in his first year, if I'm not mistaken. And everybody's like, oh, wait, maybe we got something here. And then we all know they soured eventually at the end on Bruce Weber. 2 years ago, you know, Marquise Noel, I mean, and Jerome Tang could do no wrong. They're going to the Elite Eight, playing at Madison Square Garden. And then how quick, I mean, they've shifted quickly on Jerome Tang in Manhattan.
But it's just tough. Like, if you shouldn't have fired Dennis Gates last year, then shouldn't you just chill on Tang for a minute? Like, it's going to be a bad year. I don't have anything to say besides
that. They're, 7-9 or something like that?
It's not going to be a good year. It's not going to be a good year in Manhattan for basketball. That seems fairly obvious.
The tricky part for them is, and the difference is, Jerome Tang went and basically said, hey, give me the resources, give me the, you know, essentially the NIL money to go attack the transfer portal, go spend a couple million dollars on the kid from Illinois. And they did. They supported the program. And then this is the result. At a place like Kansas State, I think it's a much tougher ask to then go back next year and expect that same amount of money to be provided to you through transfer portal. So, I think he will have to go back into the other path a little bit more.
That's where I wonder in college, because in college football, I know obviously Deion is so portal heavy. We wondered, can it work out? I wonder in college basketball, if you are single-handedly going after, if you bring in 4 or 5 guys from the portal, is that actually a recipe for success more than going after true freshmen like Dennis Gates did, or trying to find a way to get that true balance of, I don't need to go and rely on a hit or miss potentially guy. Like, Kansas is kind of learning that in a way the hard way. Like, AJ Store looked great at Wisconsin last year. Yeah, we're going to pony up the money. We're going to bring him over here. His girlfriend's over here too. Perfect situation. He hasn't played that well. And we're seeing a Kansas team that on paper was the best in the country, maybe by a mile, to start the season.
Oh, yeah, they were the favorite.
They are not playing that way. And in part, it's due to the transfer portal stuff that hasn't really hit for them yet.
Also because Hunter Dickinson moves like a bookshelf. Like, I mean, what is that? I'm sorry. Is that inaccurate?
No, it's just the way that you described it was funny.
Like, I just imagine if like a bookshelf had like arms and legs.
That's
and
Dickinson?
Then it was trying to like move in the paint. That's exactly roughly what Hunter Dickinson's play
looks like.
There's
a reason why he did not leave for the NBA. It's a reason why he's in college basketball. The NIL is the greatest thing ever for Hunter Dickinson. He's the perfect player for NIL. Go get you're worth a ton of money in college. Ton of money. Get your money, man. And he has. he'll probably play it overseas or something, if we're being honest.
Yeah, most
likely.
He
made more money.
And he'll make more, yeah, he'll make more money there than he would just being a fringe player in the NBA or G League or whatever.
You got any confidence in your boys tonight? Kansas got Iowa State tonight, number two in the country.
Iowa State, is it the second longest or longest winning streak in the country right now? I think something like that. Really good. Kansas, 6.5-point underdogs tonight at Hilton Coliseum. No, I don't have confidence they're going to win this game. No, they don't have the offense right now. Their defense is why they've won the last couple weeks, or last week, or couple games, I should say. Offensively, I don't know how they can put together an effort to score enough to where I would pick them to win. Can they cover? Yeah, I wouldn't count them out to that. I don't think they're winning tonight. No, if that's what you're asking.
I'm just asking.
I'd be gladly
it'd be really impressed. See that happen. A very impressive win.
If it happens, we can certainly discuss that tomorrow. There was one thing yesterday, and I listened back to the clip. It's kind of short, so we don't actually need to hear the audio that I didn't even think about as a massive side benefit to why the DeAndre Hopkins trade was not just a home run, but out of the park, right? So we already know they needed a wide receiver at the time. He stepped in. He immediately made them a qualified wide receiver unit at a time that they were waiting for bodies to come back and just needed to stabilize in some way offensively. So for a fifth-round pick, you already crushed it. It was worth every single penny. But then Xavier Worthy was at the podium yesterday, and he got asked a very simple question, which is, who is the wide receiver who helped you the most? And his answer to that question was DeAndre Hopkins. And I immediately realized how important of a player DeAndre Hopkins is going to be felt for years in this organization. D-Hop, he wasn't even on the roster. And then think about when he came on the roster. After he gets comfortable, then he immediately starts working with Worthy. That timeline lines up with when Worthy started immediately playing better. He's like, he knows more about routes than I'll ever forget kind of stuff, right? And so if that's the case, I just didn't realize. I'm thankful for Hopkins anyway, especially so if he's the person who helped Xavier Worthy get to the level he's at. Just a massive side benefit.
Anytime you have somebody with that kind of career to teach you and go through, I don't care whether we're talking about the NFL and a wide receiver, whether we're talking about basketball, which we just were a couple minutes ago. Yeah, if you have someone that's willing to take on that role and to go ahead and help a younger player thrive and learn and get, the tricks, as he said, that a few things he's learned that he's not going to share publicly. Yeah, that's a great spot to be in. Not every player is willing to do that. We've talked about this in quarterbacks. Some quarterbacks are very, very open to helping the rookie behind them. But then there's also guys like Brett Favre wasn't really welcoming to Aaron Rodgers. Kirk Cousins has basically said, my job is not to help Michael Penix when he was drafted. He's helped him the last couple weeks at the end of the season. But when he knew he was the starter, he's like,
everybody handles it different.
Yeah. And I don't fault. It doesn't mean these people are bad people for not helping someone that eventually is going to take their job. This is different. D-Hop has been traded midseason. Xavier Worthy was drafted by this organization. It's pretty evident who's the future at the position. Maybe D-Hop's here next year. That'd be great. I think it's nice to see that a player like DeAndre Hopkins is providing that, and maybe it helps progression. I would also say Hollywood Brown probably is part of this equation too.
If it was the same money, 1 for 7.5, would you rather have Hollywood or DeAndre Hopkins?
Hollywood Brown.
1 for 10, let's say.
Yeah, I think
Hopkins will actually get less than Hollywood, so it's not really a good apples-to-apples comparison.
It depends on what they do in the postseason. I mean, if you're Hollywood Brown, would you cut? If I told you, hey, let's just do the incentive deal, let's run it back.
1 for 10.
1 for 10 again, and then if you're still young enough, you have another you have a massive year, because I think we've seen what he potentially could have done numbers-wise this year. You do that, what's to say that next year or the year after there's not a multi-year deal on the horizon for you? All right, we'll talk more about this and the divisional round weekend with Ross Tucker, our Odyssey NFL insider.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
So it's a new year, 2025, and you're thinking, how am I going to make this year different? How am I going to build something for myself? But where do I start? Shopify is how you're going to make it happen, and here's how.
Shopify makes it simple to create your brand, open for business, and get your first sale. The best time to start your new business is right now. Get your store up and running easily with thousands of customizable templates, no coding or design skills required. All you need to do is drag and drop. Their powerful social media tools let you connect all your channels and create shoppable posts and help you sell everywhere people scroll. What happens if you don't act now? Will you regret it? What if someone beats you to the idea? Don't kick yourself when you hear this again in a year because you didn't do anything now. With Shopify, your first sale is closer than you think. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to start selling with Shopify today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Next on Cody and Gold. Back here on Cody and Gold, Alex Gold, Cody Tapp, Drew Nixon with you. We're going to be joined by Ross Tucker, our Odyssey NFL insider, in just a minute. There was some news happening that relates to the NFL and college football. We mentioned that at Texas, whether the Longhorns would go on to win the national title or not, and of course they did not, Quinn Ewers was going to be done at Texas because Arch Manning is behind him. The only question remaining for Texas was going to be whether or not Quinn Ewers decided to, you know, declare for the draft or think he can make some money in the portal. But he was not going to be the Texas quarterback next year. We just got word from Pete Thamel about 7 minutes ago that Quinn Ewers is, in fact, declaring for the NFL draft, according to his agent. So he will be available here in a couple months for one of these teams. I haven't looked at any mock drafts. It's way too early for us in Kansas City to look at mock drafts, frankly. But I don't know. Like, is he a late first round guy? Is he a early second round guy?
I think they're saying mid round is the most reasonable. Like, yeah, third, I mean, maybe, right?
That's what I'm surprised he's not going transfer portal. Go get yourself a couple $1 million for sure in the portal one more year, and then go try.
He's going to get the guy drafted in the third round behind whichever team take Sam Darnold. So the Pittsburgh Steelers sign Sam Darnold, and then Quinn Ewers will get drafted in the third or fourth round. I can predict it now.
All right, let's talk some NFL, though, with our Odyssey NFL insider, Ross Tucker, and be sure to check out his Ross Tucker Football Podcast, daily NFL podcast on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. Ross, good to have you on the show. I guess since we were talking quarterbacks real quick, I don't know if you're into the mock draft stuff or anything like that either. Are you surprised someone like Quinn Ewers wouldn't just go portal and try to make some money that way and then try the NFL a year later?
1,000%. Yes. I mean, to me, if you're not a first-round pick as a quarterback, projected first-round pick, or you think you're had a great chance to go in the first round, you should absolutely go in the transfer portal. You know, those guys are now getting, you know, I know there's a lot of numbers out there, but realistically, those guys are getting between $1.5 to $3.5 million a year. I think some of the numbers aren't real accurate. And, you know, Quinn Ewers would be about as sought after as anybody. Now, the only thing I don't know is how many programs still need a guy. You know what I mean? Like, I know, like, Penn State's backup, he hit the portal. He's from right around here, and he would play, like, 5 to 10 snaps for Penn State. They would bring him in for special situations. He hit the portal right when the playoff run happened because he wanted to get his spot somewhere else before it was too late. And he signed with Missouri, and he's evidently getting $1.5 million from Missouri. So he's down there with you guys, and I presume he'll be their starting quarterback. His name is Bo Prabula. He reminds me a lot. I don't know if you guys remember this guy from college. He kind of bounced around the NFL, Trace McSorley.
Yeah, I remember Trace.
You know,
I mean, another Penn State guy. Yeah.
Undersized guy, but a winner and fast. And that's kind of what Prabula is like, if there's any Mizzou fans listening. I think he'll do well there. But the only thing I would say about Ewers is maybe he, you know, it took him a few days to do this. So maybe they looked and saw what was out there, and maybe nobody had a need where they would give him like what Carson Beck is getting, $3 million or whatever, to go to Miami. Maybe Ewers couldn't find that. But unless you're a first-round pick, I would highly recommend at the quarterback position in particular hitting the transfer portal. First of all, you know, the reason to go to the NFL from college used to be because you couldn't get paid in college. If you can stay in college and get paid, Like, I'll go back right now.
Do you still have some eligibility?
You're in college and you're getting over $1 million. Can you imagine how fun college would be if you were getting $1.5 million to play football? Like, I'd wake up in a ditch somewhere. Like, that would be unbelievable.
Just passed out in some drained pool.
Yeah. I mean, do you guys want to come over into my hot tub? I bought an off-campus mansion. You want to come over to my house? No, it's not my parents. It's mine. I bought it. It's my own money. I mean, it's like incredible. So, yeah, I think yours is probably – here's the problem. You guys know this. You're either a first-round pick or you're like third or fourth because you're not going to take him in the second round unless you think they're a starter. And if you think they're a starter, someone's going to take him in the first round. You're not going to take a guy in the second round to be a backup. You're just like, those guys end up falling, every year. Whoever, like, name the guy, Spencer Rattler, whoever, like, any guy that fits that category, you look, next thing you notice, they're not getting drafted until, like, the fourth or fifth round.
Let's take a look at some of the games this weekend. We can get to the Chiefs and Texans here in a minute, but obviously the single biggest game of the weekend is Ravens-Bills and a possible future opponent between the two. It seems like the national narrative, Ross, is the Ravens are a bad matchup for the Bills. The Bills are a bad matchup for the Chiefs, and the Chiefs' best matchup of those two is probably the Ravens. Is that kind of how you see it? Because obviously I think those two teams are pretty even between the Ravens and Bills.
I think the Ravens are better. I think the Bills have the advantage of playing at home. I mean, you look at it, and it's like the Ravens have 6 all pros. The Bills have 1, Josh Allen. Like, that's crazy. And the Bills have some good players, but they don't have the talent level that the Ravens do. I also think the Ravens, with their ability to run it with Henry, they really have a formula that could beat anybody. It's funny. I don't know if we talked about this last week, but I have a betting podcast that I do on Tuesdays. It's called the Even Money Betting Podcast. And on it, my co-host, who's, a big numbers guy, he's a professional bettor, he says that the Ravens are by far the best team. And the logic behind that, they average, guys, more than half a yard more per play than any other team in the NFL. That's super impressive. The thought process is that the Bills being like plus 24 or whatever they are in turnover margin, that's great, but there's a lot of variance there, and that doesn't, you could have a game like Packers-Eagles where the Eagles win the turnover battle 4-0, or Herbert throws 4 picks when he's only thrown 3 all year, meaning that it's not really a predictive stat. I think the exact quote he gave was, the Ravens won 12 games and should have won 15. The Chiefs won 15 and should have won 12 because of how many of the one-score games the Chiefs won. And we've talked about that a lot, but that's just not realistic to win 100% of those. So I thought that was fascinating. And so I'm really interested to hear what the betting line would be if it's Baltimore in Kansas City next week, because a lot of those betting lines are based on yards per play and certain statistical measures like that that are not considered, prone to variance, right? It's not like, well, it could go either way. No. They've run thousands of plays this year, and they average more than half a yard more than any other team. That's the best team, which I thought was fascinating.
I definitely think, Ross, there's a good chunk of Chiefs fans that would look and say, okay, in a way, I almost want Baltimore to look great against Buffalo. And then everybody says, oh my gosh, this Baltimore team is unstoppable. And then the Chiefs get to actually play an underdog role again in the AFC title game. I think people here would welcome that.
Well, and I have a tough time picturing the Chiefs losing, because I just think whoever wins that Bills game against the Ravens, that's going to take so much out of them, right? I mean, so first of all, the Chiefs are going to have an extra day to kind of rest and prepare. And then secondly, that is going to be a war. That's going to be like as good of a – this is maybe as anticipated of a divisional round matchup as you'll see with the top two vote-getters for MVP. And what's interesting is I go on in Buffalo on Tuesdays. I'm actually going on in Baltimore later today. It's like a crushing, devastating season for whoever loses this game.
Mm-hmm.
But ironically, whoever wins the game, they're going to feel great about it for like 48 hours. And then it's, well, we still got to get over the Chiefs hump. And I think that's asking a lot. To win this game Sunday night and then go to Kansas City and win in Kansas City, that would be super impressive by whoever does it. And frankly, I think the Ravens would have the better chance. It's interesting to hear what you guys say because the Bills always beat the Chiefs in the regular season for whatever reason, and it feels like the Chiefs have the Ravens number. Whereas I look at it and think, man, I could see a scenario where the Ravens were able to finally get the Chiefs with Derrick Henry and with that rushing attack.
When we look at the rest of, like, see, this is what it is like when we get to this Texans part, and for Goldeneye, for the Ravens, it's like they've stopped Derrick Henry in the postseason, for one, and we've always said, and I think, Ross, we talked about it with you after the Buffalo loss the week after. We both feel like the one big thing that I think is undervalued in this is Sean McDermott has learned that he has to do everything to win. Like, if it's fourth and two from your own 35, you might just have to go for it. Like, he's finally learned that you can't give Mahomes a second chance.
Yep. I think I like to think that Harbaugh knows that too, or should know that.
Yeah.
You have, and honestly, if you're the Ravens and it's fourth and short, especially, how are you not going for it?
Yeah.
With Lamar Jackson and Derrick Henry and that rushing attack. I do think on some level you're right, though. The Ravens are a really bad matchup for the Bills because the Bills, they want to play a nickel. They think they have the best nickel back in the league in Taron Johnson, number seven. They want, and I know he got banged up last week, but they want him to be out there as much as possible. Well, the Ravens aren't going to let you do that. The Ravens have, like, at least two big bodies, meaning two tight ends or a tight end and that fullback, Patrick Ricard, at least two of them out there on every play. And sometimes they'll go three or four. And especially without Zay Flowers, I would think that they would just try to run the ball right down the Bills' throat, and they might be able to.
We're talking to our Odyssey NFL insider, Ross Tucker, here on 96.5 The Fan. All right, Chiefs-Texans, I know we're talking AFC title game and potential matchups. Should the Texans be getting a little more attention, I would say? We know they played the Chiefs back in Week 16. It was an 8-point win for Kansas City. Some elements of those teams are the same. There's a few changes. Some guys are healthier than they were back then. The Chiefs are as healthy as I think you can be as a playoff team, frankly. Is this Texans team, in your opinion, capable of hanging better than they did in Week 16?
I think so, yes, because I think they have a little bit more confidence now based on how that game went last week, right? You know, you win by 20 points, you win a playoff game, especially one where you were the underdog and people were counting you out. Now those guys have that belief. You know, it's no secret. CJ Stroud will have to have one of the best games of his career. And the Texans will have to find a way to be able to run it a little bit. Their best chance for success is probably defense, right? I mean, you know, somehow get a pick six or a strip sack of Mahomes. The Texans are elite at edge rusher and at corner. Absolutely elite. And by the way, that's not great for the Chiefs with their offensive tackles. So the Texans need Danielle Hunter and Will Anderson to totally, thoroughly dominate that game off the edge, make Mahomes' life miserable, get a strip sack, maybe Stingley or Laster gets a pick six. I just don't see the Texans scoring that many points against the Chiefs' defense now that the Chiefs are returning to almost full health.
Are you surprised that Andy Reid is still kicking around DJ Humphries or Joe Tooney at left tackle?
Well, that is if you think that he really is still kicking around.
Yeah. I think they still want DJ Humphries. I think they're really still looking for a reason. That. You think they're just going to start Tooney?
I think it'll be Tooney at left tackle, Caliendo at left guard, because they clearly were performing better those last couple games offensively with those guys there. Now, the thing that's weird about that is it's not like a perfect controlled scientific experiment, because they also had got Hollywood Brown back. But if you look, it's funny because I just finished recording my fantasy show, the Fantasy Feast podcast. Those two games since Hollywood Brown came back, the Chiefs, Patrick Mahomes, has the quickest time from snap to throw in the NFL. So it's funny because we all think of Mahomes as extending plays and Mahomes running around and making them reckless. Nobody is getting the ball out of their hands since Hollywood Brown came back from injury than Mahomes. So how much of that is because of Hollywood Brown? How much of it is just because they know Tooney's not really a left tackle that's going to be able to hold up in pass pro, 40 times a game for extended time? So it's very, very interesting. Very interesting to see sort of that situation. I would think that they would start with the way they've been going, and then if it's not going well, maybe then put in Humphreys. But I'd be surprised if they just put Humphreys out there. But you never, I mean, it's been 23 days, so maybe.
All right, last one for you before I let you go. Coaching carousel, we know one vacancy has been filled. Another one opened up this week with Dallas. Real quick, what do you think ultimately happens with the Raiders job and the Cowboys job? Those are the two, I think, most interesting in terms of the wide reach maybe of who they could hire.
Yeah, I think the Raiders is going to be Ben Johnson, the Lions offensive coordinator. I think Brady's going to get him. And I mean, I think that's basically all there is to it. Brady's kind of doing a full court press. And I think as a result, he's going to be able to get Ben Johnson to be the guy in Las Vegas, which is just gigantic. Not good for you guys, because I really do feel like Ben Johnson is special. I think he's as good of a coordinator as we've seen in recent years. And I just think that I think Ben Johnson, like, the time is now, and I think it's either going to be Chicago or the Raiders, and I think they're going to get him with the Raiders because they're going to be able to pitch him on, hey, we'll also help you. You can have some say in who we bring in as the GM, which is not the case in Chicago, where Ryan Poles is the GM. And also, I don't know. You know, maybe he loves Caleb Williams. Maybe he doesn't. Mm-hmm. You know, whereas with the Raiders, he could have some input on the quarterback that they bring in.
Ross Tucker, our Odyssey NFL insider. Appreciate it as always, man. Enjoy the weekend.
Sounds great. Thanks, guys.
There you go. Ross Tucker. He's got his podcast, the Ross Tucker Football Podcast, daily NFL podcast on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcast. Yeah, like I hear him on. I think Ben Johnson is going to be a really, really good offensive mind. But my only question of like, oh, be careful about him would be, I still want to know who's his quarterback ultimately. He could be a great play caller, but who's the Raiders quarterback? They might get Ben Johnson, which is I don't want to call it a home run hire necessarily,
it's a good get.
But it's a very good hire. And to beat out the Chicago Bears, if that's what happens, is a huge deal. But until they're picking sixth, right? Like, until their quarterback situation's figured out, are they trading up for Sanders? Are they trading up for Cam Ward? Are they bringing in, you know, Sam Darnold? Like, what is actually going to make the difference is going to be who's their quarterback.
If I were, I told you this maybe, we did this like an all 32, maybe a week ago or 2 weeks ago. If I were a Raiders fan, let's just say this hire happens, I'd be worried about it. And the reasons are the same, which is I've told you, the sport is too big and you need less jobs. And Ben Johnson wants to come in, choose a new offense, choose his quarterback, choose the general manager, be the head guy in charge ahead of the general manager and final decision making. It's too much.
We don't know the last part yet.
It's too much.
We don't know the last part. He wants a say in who they hire as GM. We don't know. He might want that. We don't know for sure if he wants final say. We don't know.
I just think if you want to choose the GM, you want to lord it over him. And there was at least one report that he didn't want to walk into a situation where a GM was going to have ultimate say over final roster decisions. And look, every once in a while it works out. I think if it came down to it and there was a player on the 53-man roster that one guy desperately wanted, one guy didn't, it was between Veach and Reed, I think Reed would probably get the last say in the room. If it were just, we're dragging it out should. And we're
He's also won multiple rings and everything.
I think a lot of times when these coaches who do not have the experience and they're like, I'm going to fix this whole organization, but you got to give me total control in order to do it, find out that they've bitten off more than they can chew. And like, we'll see.
Yeah.
I don't know that it'll definitively be the case, but that would absolutely be my worry if I were the Raiders.
I think there's definitely some truth to that. It'll be ultimately, does he get final say and all that? Or
does
he just
get the right quarterback? You're right, because if he drafts the right quarterback, none of this matters.
Yeah, and it's one thing, hey, he gets say in who we bring in as a GM, but is he getting, you know, does he have more control than that? Like, it's, I don't think it's going to be, it doesn't sound like the same as when basically Reed handpicked John Dorsey and then handpicked Brett Veach. I don't know if Ben Johnson's handpicking. It's there's two different ways to look at it. Is he handpicking the GM, or is it like, hey, we're looking at these guys, who do you like to be a GM? Is it, okay, you like this guy, we'll go ahead and hire this guy, or is it, I don't know if it's Ben Johnson bringing the assistant GM from Detroit with him, and it's like his guy that way. I don't know.
When there also a report that he wanted to be one of the highest paid coaches as well, off the bat.
Yeah. He's got leverage. I
wonder if...
I mean, you can ask whatever you want. I can ask Odyssey right now for $1 million a year. They're probably not going to pay it to me.
Yeah, but again, if he wants $10 million, he's like one of the top coaches with no experience. So I wonder if the Raiders, like...
I'm sure they're going to have to pony up.
I wonder if it's realistic because the Raiders would be the only team to say, hey, you want full control and you want $10 to $15 million a year? We'll give you that. And not regardless of the QB, but he might be, if it were down to the Raiders, and I don't know.
It sounds like it's somebody, the Bears. Yeah.
If it's the Raiders or the Bears, but the Bears really don't want to give you much at all, if anything, but the Raiders give you everything and the money, which matters to Ben more, having that control or having that quarterback and making a little bit less?
Yeah. What Cody said though a minute or two ago, and that's what it is. Ultimately, they can have the best head coach ever. You don't have a quarterback, it's not going to matter. So that's what's more interesting to me. If we back up months ago, it's surprising if Ben Johnson chooses the Raiders over the other jobs, because I think there's better jobs. But if the Raiders get him, that's a really, really nice hire, considering who some of the names...
The people didn't think they'd take that job, so that Ben Johnson would take that
job. But you got it. The quarterback is, of course, going to be the key there for it to actually become a threat. We went through the AFC West. The Broncos are on the right track, it looks like, with their quarterback. I know Herbert just had a terrible postseason, but as an organization, looks like they got the right head coach. That, you know, we don't need to act like Herbert's like an awful quarterback now. He has to prove himself in the postseason, but he's not terrible. The Raiders still don't have a coach, and they still don't have a quarterback.
Or a GM.
Or a GM.
Also matters.
I don't think the Raiders are just all of a sudden going to be a problem.
And it's always like it, and it's, they do things like, when I compile all of it, this is why I'm just like, I'll be convinced that it won't work with Ben Johnson, even though I think he's a really good coordinator too. I'm not even disagreeing with that. It's like the too many cooks in the kitchen. Now I'm letting Brady decide who the best head coaching candidate is. Why? Because he worked with two dudes in 45 years. Like, and yeah, John Elway was really good at the league too. He wasn't so good at choosing coaches. And it's like too many things where you're like, I don't just want Tom Brady buying into my league and being like, I'll choose the coach. I got it, guys. You're like,
We don't need to go down the Vrabel route again, but I have to ask you, like, is there going to be a coaching hire you do like this cycle? So far, you didn't like the Vrabel. It sounds like you won't like Ben Johnson.
Yeah,
the Raiders.
That's crazy.
Will there be one?
Have there been one? That's a good question.
There's only been one officially.
I don't have any other current objections. I told you, actually, funny enough, that I think I'd like it if Chicago went with an experienced coach.
Yeah.
Like, if they hired Pete Carroll or McCarthy, I actually think those are pretty reasonable hires that make sense.
Yeah, and they make sense. I'll say Bears fans are terrified they're going to hire Mike McCarthy.
I know.
They're terrified.
I know.
We'll see if any news comes on that front.
They'll all be fired in 4 years throughout the day. 80% of them.
That's typically how it goes.
If I hate all of them, I actually will be right more times than I'll be wrong.
Coming up next, let's talk about who we could expect to have a breakout performance starting on Saturday.